The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Oh, what a great audience. Let's dim the lights for this next one. Nope, too much. Ah, there it is. Gotta get things just right. Like Progressive's Name Your Price tool. Tell us what you want to pay and we help you find coverage options that fit your budget. And now, the mood is right. Wait, the lights are back on again. Trudy, can you? And now it's completely dark.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Straight out of Austin, Texas, it's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
You heard the lady on Second Thought, episode 105, presented by Hook'em.com and our friends at Bud Light. Cedric Golden here with the Duck, Kirk Bowles. Wow. Oh, Duck, we've got a lot of, we're going to talk some UT football.
It's coming up.
A little later. You know, the Houston Astros are.
They're hot again.
Are hot again. We're going to have a special treat. Sports Illustrated writer, senior writer. They always say
that's
that
right.
When
get
you're important.
Right. Get that right.
When
yeah.
You're important on the
which
staff.
Which is why neither one of us is a senior writer.
Yeah, you're just a senior citizen.
Just a senior citizen. Thanks we'll for that clarification.
Ben, his name's Ben Ryder.
Great.
And he's going to be joining us. Another thing a little outside the box, we are taking our little act on the road, sir.
Are we?
Today.
Where are we going?
Later on today,
yeah,
we are going to be on 104.9. We are going to be hosting the radio show of one Roderick Babers, the Rodcast, from 1 to 3 on 104.9. So
I thought we were banned from radio.
We were not. Well, they lifted it just
lifted
for this
ban. Oh,
one
good.
Day.
Good.
So we are going to we're gonna host the show
for two hours. Please listen.
Then
call.
Going to have a guest or two. We're going to talk UT football, whatever you want to talk about. So you can get your podcast. You're getting your podcast fix right now. And then later on, you can get a little radio fix. But
let's get to our guest.
It's the dog days of summer, and thank God there's some baseball going on. So we had a really good guest. Great conversation with Ben Ryder. Check this out. We are back in the dungeon, and we have landed a big fish in the journalism world. Duck, Ben Ryder, a writer from Sports Illustrated, and they like to call him senior writers, which means he's important.
He is important.
He's very important. He's the author of Astro Ball, the new way to win it all. Just hit the bookshelves. He's coming to Austin on July 30th for a book signing at Book People, 7 o'clock. That's a popular spot for the authors. So, Ben, how's it going? And how are sales? Because we like to hear from people who are making money.
From what I can tell, it's going really well, guys. The reception of the book has been extraordinary nationally, particularly down in Texas. Now, I launched the book in Houston when it came out on July 10th, and just a huge turnout at Brazos Bookstore there. I actually sold out of books before I started speaking. So judging from that, seems to be good start.
Well, that's the way to do it. And all this book is a spinoff from the celebrated cover story in Sports Illustrated in 2014, where Ben Ryder predicted the Astros would win the 2017 World Series. And what happened? Astros won the 2017 World Series. So I guess you're the toast of town in Houston. Are you going to run for office down in Houston? You're pretty
maybe
popular.
Not quite yet, but people have certainly been wonderful to me. Yeah, you know, I wrote that story not thinking it would be on the cover, not thinking we would make that sort of prediction.
Right.
Really went down there in June of 2014 to figure out what the heck was going on with the Astros. So the worst team in half a century, as everybody remembers.
Oh, yeah.
Knew they were ludicrously bad, but also knew the front office had some smart guys in it who had some success in St. Louis. So I just went down trying to figure out what was going on there. Quickly figured out that they had what sounded to me to be a very interesting plan, a very innovative plan indeed. So wrote a 5,000-word piece that made the cover with that famous prediction. Amazingly enough, it came true. The book is not really about the prediction, though. I mean, okay. It is a little. I had to mention it.
Right.
I had to mention it, obviously.
Had to.
But it's really about how they made it come true. That's the crux narrative here, this new way they discovered to turn an absolute laughingstock into maybe the most unexpected of champions.
How about the decision to put George Springer on the cover, and he ends up being the World Series MVP. I mean, it was all so prophetic. But how was the reaction to the piece when you wrote it? Twitter is brutal, and social media, everybody has a take now. Did you just get blasted because they had those 100 lost seasons that were stacking up?
Yeah, three in a row.
And then you write this big centerpiece. What was the reaction to Twitter on that piece?
You know, I think if anything, I understood how mad people were about what the Astros were doing, not just in Houston, but nationally. You know, people thought that they were being run cynically. They thought they were being run, you know, incompetently. So, yeah, I mean, when this thing came out, it stirred some conversation. You know, people thought that we were just trying to put a hot take out there to get attention. And, look, we believed in the story. Obviously, we believed in what we were asserting. But yeah, you always want to stir the pot a little bit with a magazine cover. That's what a magazine cover is for. But man, I did not expect the level of hate that we got for this cover. It was pretty brutal right away. I remember one tweet in particular that I quote in the book. You know, thanks for the laugh. I haven't had a healthy laugh like that in a long time. It's really going at it. You know, even the Houston Chronicle called it, I quote, more of an attention-grabbing and tongue-in-cheek projection than a prediction.
Wow.
And hey, man, even some people on our own staff were furious about it. My colleague, Alan Shitnuck, the great golf writer, wrote a long story about Michelle Wee that week, who had finally broken through after 10 years of trying to make good on her former phenom status and win the U.S. Open. He was sure that cover would that story would be the cover. Didn't know that it hadn't until he went to his mailbox down in California and pulled it out. He had a pretty funny reaction. I mean, he tweeted right away, my Ask the Michelle Wee feature is in this week's SI, the one with last place Astros on the cover, hashtag kill me now, hashtag please. So yeah, it's safe to say that the reaction, by and large, to that cover was not promising back in 2014.
But there was a connection between Wee and the Astros. She lost like 105 too. So I mean, she had never won. I mean, there was some connection.
Yeah, but
there.
Astros were setting records for futility. That's what you got to remember. 105 losses, 3-0. So what I want to know, Ben, is that why didn't you name the book "I Told You So"? You know, you had the last laugh on everybody. You missed your chair. At least should have been the subtitle. "I Told You So," right?
Well, look, again, like I started to get the sense that people are excited that this prediction came true. I am too, but I just want it to be about the prediction, and it's not. I really wanted to dig in using you know, like the 4 or 5 years of access I'd had to the organization, because I certainly didn't stop reporting on them. When that cover came out, I kept tabs on them, I kept writing about them, kept in touch, kept visiting them. So, you know, when I really technically started writing this book only this winter, I've been reporting and almost writing in my head for 4+ years. So it's really a much broader work than just about the prediction. What I think is an unprecedented look into the operation of the most modern sports franchise there is.
And you touched on that, and we all want access, and access has been so restricted, especially here in Austin, Texas. We're on the college level. Paranoia, it seemed like, in sports is at an all-time high. So what did you say to Jeff Lunau and the Astro front office that allowed you to get that access? And then once you were in there, how long were you there, like a week? How early in that process did you go, oh, my God, this is going to be great?
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't easy. Like, they are a secretive organization, obviously, and what they're doing as far as analytics has to be secret in order for it to work. I think it was about a year of negotiation.
Wow.
We're not going to write a story about the worst team in modern baseball history if we don't get some sort of inside look at what they're up to. I think what it was that they had gotten so killed on such a wide basis for so long that they were looking for the chance to tell the world what they were up to.
Right.
I, of course, didn't make any promises. All I said was, I'm going to come in here with an open mind. And that's what I did. The access was pretty great, actually. I was in the room when their scouts in their analytics department and Jeff Luno and Craig Biggio was there and Nolan Ryan was there and Reed Ryan was there when they were having their final meeting to decide who they were going to take first overall in the 2014 draft. You know, that was sort of like a dream situation for a writer who's trying to get an inside look at a team. And I've asked many teams for that sort of access before, had never gotten it. I spent, I think, 3 days with them, including, the night of that draft in Houston. But then, over the years to follow, I just kept going back to back because I had a sense that this story might develop in some interesting ways.
Well, I know in researching it, I know Lunau gets the yeoman credit. But this Sig Medel keeps coming up, the director of decision sciences. Is he the number cruncher? What was his role?
Right. He was the chief analytics guy, and Jeff Luno brought him over from St. Louis, where they essentially had a run where they had the best draft of any franchise in the league, largely under the leadership of Sig. But Sig's a fascinating character. In some ways, he's like the heart and the brains of the book. He was a blackjack dealer in college. After college, he went to work as a rocket scientist at NASA. Just a brilliant guy. But unlike a lot of people who are inclined towards those sort of disciplines, he's also a people person. He's a humanist as well. So he and Jeff together had a lot of insight about, first of all, how to push analytics as far as you could possibly go. But their real stroke of genius was to bring back and put more importance on a source of information that had been kind of recently overlooked, at least since Moneyball came out, not just in baseball, but a lot of industries. Human, essentially. Human gut, human right. instinct. What their scouts were saying. That sort of stuff was considered passé for a while. They figured out a way to synthesize it with the analytics to get the best out of both man and machine. And as I write in the book, that strategy paid off brilliantly in all sorts of ways.
And you touch on that because analytics, it sounds like such a cold-hearted term. Like, well, here's what the stats say. We've got to throw him a slider on 3-1 because he hadn't hit it the last 22 times. So the human approach and everything. I was curious how – is this son of Moneyball? Was Moneyball kind of the dinosaur age, and now it's progressed to this stage? Or what were the similarities and maybe some of the contrasts with Moneyball and Astro Ball?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Moneyball, for my money, is probably the most important sports book of all time, not just for readers, but, I mean, that book just changed the industry almost immediately. The very reason that Jeff Luno, who was a consultant for McKinsey & Company and worked at tech companies and stuff, the very reason he got that job in St. Louis was because the owner, Bill DeWitt, read Moneyball. Man, this is perhaps a potential advantage that we could have that we're not taking. Mm-hmm. I need to find somebody who could help me do this. So it's very important that way. But yeah, I think you can see Astro Ball as a successor to Moneyball for real. This is what teams are doing now to get an advantage, now that the advantages that they once had by focusing on analytics above all have kind of flattened out and dissipated.
I really love the analytical part of it. But, and like you said about Medel, he's a people person as well. Along those lines, I know Carlos Beltran didn't pee a drop in that World Series, but he is hailed as so integral, such an integral part of that win. Why was he so important? He didn't produce the numbers we're talking about, but you talk about him in the book. Why was he such an important part of that win without offensive production?
Right. Well, this was probably the most unexpected, surprising part of the book to me as I was reporting it. I kind of knew what everybody else knew, that Beltran had probably not on the field, or certainly not on the field, lived up to his one-year, $16 million contract, I should say. He was a bit disappointing in the power department. He didn't have the World Series. But as I was covering the team last year, it was amazing how often his name came up in conversations with Carlos Correa, with Jose Altuve, George Springer. Everybody just gave him so much credit. So I really wanted to sit in and see why. And in some ways, it's, you know, one of the more interesting chapters in the whole book, in my opinion, because you learn exactly what he did in that clubhouse to turn a very good team into a champion. You have to give Jeff Luno a lot of credit. You know, one of his real moments of brilliance was realizing that there are things that numbers can't quantify at all. And a lot of analysts would say, well, that means they don't exist. But Luno says, can't quantify it, that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And that thing was team chemistry and the idea of the leadership and what a veteran who's seen it all, done it all, like Carlos Beltran, could bring to what was on the whole a very young team. From the moment he stepped into the clubhouse, he made his mark on it. You know, Carlos Correa told me that sitting down with him, learning how to analyze opposing pitchers, pitch to pitch, contributed 7 home runs in his estimate to his total last year. His greatest probably in the World Series, though. First, he kind of diffused that potentially very damaging incident with Yuli Gurriel and Yu Darvish. He's been a teammate of Yu Darvish. He helps Gurriel kind of negotiate those rough waters after he made that offensive dugout, which he didn't mean to be offensive.
Right.
But, you know, on the field, this is a guy who has spent his career learning how to read pitchers, how to see if they're tipping, how to get every leg up he could. And he saw that Yu Darvish was tipping his pitches. He saw that when Yu Darvish, this is on video, that when Yu Darvish was planning to throw an off-speed pitch, his hand stayed still in his glove. When he was going to throw a fastball, his wrist wiggled to get the proper grip. He told everyone, look for this. You're going to know what's coming. And look, I mean, we all saw how the Astros beat up on Yu Darvish in both Game 3 and Game 7. That's not a coincidence. So even though the guy didn't have a hit in the World Series, I mean, I think it's not a stretch to say that they might not be champions if he wasn't there.
And that tells you the value of a 25-man roster. You don't all have to produce the same way, absolutely. And being able to listen and open to different ways of doing things is just part of their process, I think. Anything else that you saw and during your interviews heard that make the Astros a little bit different? Anything else that maybe sets them apart from other Major League Baseball clubs?
A whole lot of things. I mean, one of the things is their openness to learning from their mistakes. Now, you know, a lot of teams, a lot of critics say these guys are arrogant, they have too much confidence, they're know-it-alls.
Mm-hmm.
They're not actually that way. They certainly have to have a certain level of confidence to, you know, semi-intentionally be as horrible as they were for so many years and continue to believe in the plan. But look, they're very open about what's probably their mistake, which was cutting a guy at the end of spring training in 2014 who, like, days later turned into an absolute superstar as he remains to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, is J.D. Martinez, who's an outfielder for them. Wasn't very good for a few years. But what he did the winter before 2014 is he completely overhauled his swing. He went down to Venezuela to winter ball, was crushing the ball with this new thought. He figured it out. And he came back and he told Jeff Luno and Bo Porter, the manager at the time, look, guys, I think I figured something out. This is feeling really good. It's feeling really different. All I ask is that you give me some at-bats during spring training. They said to, then they only gave him 18 at-bats all spring and cut him. Tigers picked him up. A couple days later, he came back in a minor league game and hit 3 home runs in a single game. And Jeff Luno told me, he's like, I'm sitting there watching this. I'm like, oh my God, what did we do? What they did was cut exactly the type of guy their whole program is designed to find. He's a chief superstar. Now he's leading baseball in home runs. But, you know, a lot of teams have tried to cover this up, to make excuses for it. The Astros didn't. They learned from it. And they kind of vowed that if somebody comes back, saying that they've made wholesale changes over the winter, they're going to give them a chance to show them.
Well, I'm a big believer in J.D. Martinez. He's the anchor of my fantasy team.
Oh, God, stop it. No more fantasy baseball.
So,
his team
you must be doing
crappy.
Well, then.
No.
Just fourth. I need some more closers.
It's a four-team league, yeah.
But, you know, you look at the Astros, I mean, how would they not be different? You got a 5'4" guy who hits for power and steals bases and MVP, and you got a, until Verlander trade came, you had a ace in Dallas Keuchel who couldn't break a pane of glass. So it's in a lot of international players and young players. So it's got a great mix, too, of young and veteran, do they not? And it seemed like they're really able to make that work. It's just because you know how baseball locker rooms are. There's so much diversity there, and it seemed like the Astros really embrace that.
They do, and to a certain degree, they kind of select players who are going to cohere in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like one thing they really look for is their system's obviously designed to find undervalued players in the draft, internationally, players who are probably going to outproduce what they're going to have to pay them, in other words. But they also look for a specific characteristic, which they call growth mindset, players who are adaptable, who are gritty, who have the ability to become better than what they are now. One of the things they look for in their prospects is good grades. They find that good students tend to have those characteristics. So, for example, Alex Bregman was an excellent student. Carlos Correa graduated at the top of his class in the Puerto Rico Baseball Academy.
Hmm.
Really look for that intelligence in addition to baseball skills. And that's even why a guy like Alex Bregman has gotten so much better so fast. And one reason why someone like Carlos Correa was able to come into the big leagues at 20 and immediately establish himself as the best shortstop in the game.
And Bregman's just a baseball life. He just lives and dies with it. You know, they couldn't get him out of the batting cages at LSU. You know, he just loved the game so much. So, and you know, we mentioned the Moneyball thing. So I'm sure by this time, Ben, you're already in negotiations for the movie. And so we need to know who's going to play you, who's going to play Jeff Luhnow. You got all those roles farmed out yet?
You know, we haven't started casting yet.
Chris Pratt.
That, you know what? I was thinking that. But it would have to be, if he's playing me, it would have to be like somewhere between his transition from kind of like chubby comedy mm-hmm. guy into super jacked action star. You know, somewhere in the middle mm-hmm. of that run would be good. But yeah, man, I mean, I would love to see a big screen adaptation of this. I mean, Moneyball made it, and this one might have a little bit more satisfying ending than that story did.
So you don't want to be Brad Pitt, or does Jeff Luhnow want Brad Pitt, or how's that going to work? You fight over him, or
I'm sure if Brad's available, any of us would love to be played by him.
You're not going to quibble, right?
I've got a push.
No,
you know, this is my last question for you, Ben. I've got a personal question. I mean, you sound like a really smart guy. You don't get to write for SI by not being smart. How did you get mixed up with someone like Matthew Obernauer? I mean, that's I can't believe that you would run in the same circles with the likes of that guy.
You know, Matt's an old friend. I think you're underestimating a little bit. He's a sharp guy. He's a lawyer. You know, working in baseball now, I think you got to give him a little bit more credit than that.
That's actually my brother. He worked here for a few years. He actually became a sports writer and got smart and got the hell out. Went to law school, and now he's working for the Colorado Rockies. And just a shout out to him. He's a loyal listener to the podcast, and he actually it was his idea to get us hooked up with you, and we're thanking him for that. This was a great conversation.
And I want to ask you just one more question about analytics, Ben. Is it the way it's going? Is it great for baseball? Is it bad for baseball? You're seeing shifts. I saw a third baseman in right center field just this week.
I know.
You know, and I don't know who it was. I think it was Matt Carpenter had a bunt single to the left side of the infield, mm-hmm. which I'd love to see more of. Where do you think that's going for the future of baseball analytics?
Right. Well, the Astros were certainly one of the pioneers as far as the shift in particular, as well as a lot of things. I know there's a lot of talk now about whether Rob Manfred and the league will legislate against them in some way.
Right.
I think we're very far away from that. Look, it's a constant evolution. I think that eventually teams will come up with ways to beat the shift. I think they've already started to, whether it's hitting the other way, hitting on a line, bunting sometimes, essentially forcing to have to play back. So I wouldn't like to see anything draconian done by the league as far as the shift. As far as analytics generally, my view right now is that landscape's really flattened. Like, there's no team without a seriously intense department with PhDs and their own Sigma Dels there. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got similar numbers. You can analyze them in different ways. But I really do believe that the advantage, the way to differentiate yourself, is going to further skip back towards those things which are really difficult to quantify. The soft information, character, team chemistry, even things like diet and stuff like that. So I think the team's looking to get a leg up. You have to have that analytics department. But to get that extra oomph you need to win the World Series, it's going to be increasingly about the people.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the next ultimate shift where nobody on base and the team pulls their catcher and they put the catcher in the, you know, between shortstop and third base.
Just, they're pulling the goalie.
Just something crazy, you know. We don't need a catcher. So umpire, fend for yourself. So, but anyway, this has been fascinating. And I assume you know the next 10 or 12 World Series winners, right? So you spent a lot of time in Vegas, right?
You know, on November 2nd, you know, the day after this prediction came true, a bunch of people told me, you know what, man, you can never make a prediction again. Just ride this one, you know. Don't try to do another one. You'll probably be wrong. Well, I'd already blown the night before in my column I wrote from Los Angeles after Game 7. I predicted that the Astros were going to repeat
nice.
In 2018. So I'm already on the record there. You know, I'm not retracting that. This team looks, if anything, than it did last year. Anything can happen in the playoffs. But, you know, I still like their chances pretty well.
You just can't help yourself, Ben, I tell you. But I do like your chances. I think it could be I'm already looking forward to that Red Sox-Astros series to the AL Championship. But it's just been a pleasure having you with us, Ben, and big success with the book and a great time at the book signing at Book People next week.
July 30th, 7 p.m., Book People be there.
Yeah.
We thank you a lot, bro, and we look forward to seeing you again down the road.
Look forward to it, guys. Thanks again.
Take care. Bye, Ben.
Doug, great conversation with Ben Ryder, man.
He's interesting.
That dude was full of information. You know, baseball's an information business.
Oh, yeah.
It's more of a
lot about numbers.
Business. Yeah. That's why they get so bent up, out of shape when some guy gets popped. For steroids, mm-hmm. because that whole sport is about numbers. Football guy gets popped, who cares?
Nobody.
No one.
Nobody.
No one cares that Julian Edelman used steroids. They just care that he's back in week 5.
Mm-hmm.
It's different. Well, speaking of football, we're close.
It's a week away.
We're a week away from the reporting Friday, August 3rd.
Right.
And then we get to hear about how close everybody is.
Chemistry, baby.
The chemistry. Oh, we're so close.
It's the best ever. We had barbecue.
These guys are my brothers.
We had barbecue together. We love each other.
It was ping pong 1 year, barbecue 1 year. What's it going to be this year?
Oh,
who knows? How about wins?
Victories would be nice.
Victories would be nice.
And that should be their mantra. That should be their slogan. Victories would be nice.
Mac always had a little bracelet.
Oh, take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
Remember that long
Just
one?
Just do your job.
The man to the left of you, the man to the right of you, like, took over a whole bumper of a car.
Well, it was going to be a bracelet, but I think they turned it into like a necktie because it was so long.
Yeah, it was long.
So,
it was long. So,
well, do you believe the hype early? I mean,
there is no hype.
August is.
What do you mean hype?
I'm not a big August guy.
I hate August.
I would, like you said to me earlier today, I would like to just snap my finger mm-hmm. and have it be September 1st.
I would.
We're still a long way away from Texas at Maryland.
A lot of hot afternoon practices. A
lot of practices that we probably won't get to
probably
see.
Probably not.
And that's fine with me if it's going to be 110 out there.
I'd just like to see some scrimmages on Saturday.
Bit.
That's what I would like.
But we're probably not going to be privy to those.
We should ask Tom if he'd let us in.
He might. He likes you. Tom likes
does
you.
Does he?
Yeah, he does.
Oh, okay.
He loves Brian.
If you say so.
He loves Brian.
Everybody loves Brian.
I don't.
Oh,
I don't.
Okay. All right.
I just like him a lot. I don't love him.
That's true. Well, we'll get Brian Ass in. So. Anyway, all right, here's the thing, okay? Quarterback, you know, every team, if you don't have that starting quarterback like Will Greer or somebody like that, who's going to be your quarterback? Who's going to be your quarterback? And we know, and we're going to be talking about that incessantly, okay? But I've got one question for you, okay? Forget a quarterback. What's the one football phase, position, area that you think needs to be addressed in August before the Maryland game?
Quarterback.
I'm going to hit you.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to knock you in the head.
You quit threatening me.
You don't follow instructions.
So dang important.
You don't follow instructions very well. I tell you, we're going to talk about that the next month. Pick something else.
I take instruction well from my bosses.
Pick something else. I'm
your
boss.
Not from the likes of you.
You know I'm your boss.
Outside of Sam and Shane and Cam.
What's your area of concern?
Thompson, my area of concern is defensive tackle.
One position?
I'm going to tell you why. If I can
this
just,
ought to be good.
God, if I can just get out a sentence. Puna Ford was the heart and soul of that defense. Remember when Chris Whaley was making all those plays late in his career before he blew out his Achilles?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or his knee or whatever it was. Chris, he's a Chris Whaley type, a big play guy and a disruptor, a guy that makes things happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you're in the middle of that line and you can occupy two blockers and allow other guys like Gary Johnson or Brecken or Malik last year to make plays, you're an unsung hero, and people may not have written a lot or talked a lot about Puna Ford, but he was a grown man.
He was. He wasn't a talker. He wasn't a self-promoter.
He wasn't. Just a guy that did his job.
Yeah, over and above.
And the question is, will you have guys to step up in that man position? That is a man's position.
Mm-hmm. No.
Will DeAndre Christmas Giles, will Charles Amenihue, will someone like Gerald Wilbon, will one of those guys step up? And I believe Chris Nelson is up to the task. I think he's going to hold it down. But mm-hmm. they're going to need another guy next to Chris Nelson to keep the toughness up front. I think they're going to be okay on the edge with Brecken.
Well, and Amenihue's an end. And
Charles,
Roach is an end linebacker, outside linebacker. So, and Taquan Graham, Tom Herman mentioned in Frisco that they tried Taquan Graham at nose tackle a little bit. And he said, I'm not saying he's going to play there, which probably means he's going to play there. But
it also tells you that Tom's looking for answers.
Oh, yeah.
Because you don't replace a guy like Puna overnight.
And Chris Nelson's not a 70-play guy. You're going to just plug him in there, and he's going to play the whole game. So
no,
you're
but
right.
But he's a quality player.
Yeah.
But I don't know that you're going to ask him to log those kind of reps. That's a lot,
man. Well, Puna Ford was probably the best D lineman in the conference.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Well, and that's a very good point. My thing is I'm going back to the offensive line because – you know, it's just been weak for a number of years now. They finally got somebody drafted, you know, in Connor Williams, who went to the Dallas Cowboys. But, you know, his stock slipped as well. So
he was hurt.
So it did. He was hurt and missed the bulk of the year. So my question is, do they have a stud left tackle, you know, to protect the passer now that Connor Williams is gone? Is Calvin Anderson, the grad transfer from Rice, is he that guy?
They never Tom did not talk about Calvin.
He didn't mention him. And
that's a senior guy coming in.
He's a grad transfer. He already graduated.
All we were talking about were plug and play. He's a plug and play.
Right.
And so they didn't give him a whole lot of run in Frisco. And, man, you know, people don't talk about the offensive line that much, but I thought that they would have spoken about him a little bit more than they did.
Well, they need to because he's the left tackle. If he was that good, the common assumption is, why isn't he in the NFL? It wasn't like he's the final piece of the puzzle to put him in the national championship. Nobody's thinking that at Texas. So how good is he? The other one, Patrick Vahe at left guard, he's been here forever. You know, that was kind of his NFL leave year if he wanted to. But he's back, and nobody's just singing his praise and saying, oh, yeah, he's going to be a first or second round pick.
He looks like a guy, but he doesn't always play like a guy.
And then center, Zach Shackelford last year, you know, he had to play early, and he never had the body strength to match up with those nose tackles that you mentioned, like a Puna Ford. He didn't have the strength to cope with that. And so if you got that middle clogged up, you're not going to run the ball very well at all.
Mm-mm.
And then Derek Kirst there, the freshman from San Antonio, you know, had a lot of bright spots last year, but was overmatched and wasn't ready. And then you have your Elijah Rodriguez, who came back in the bowl game and didn't look very good. And Patrick Hudson's another one that was once going to be a Baylor Bear. So it's like, I look at the offensive line. They got to protect a quarterback, and they got, that's the start of the running game. And the fact that, you know, their leading rusher was Sam Ehlinger, the quarterback, and their running backs were in the 300-yard range. That's not winning football.
Not at a national title type level. You can win six or seven games with that, but Sam's a lot of his runs were to keep from getting killed.
Sure,
they were scrambles.
They weren't by design.
Not by design, and people would cringe even when you ran by design because you just it's not like you have Vince Young back there who's going to run for 1,000 yards.
Anything but.
I mean, Vince Young can take a break, a missed tackle, and go for 50.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to see Sam running for 50, 60-yard touchdowns.
No. And that's why I think that's such a pivotal thing. And obviously, Herman felt that way as well because for the extra hire as a 10th assistant coach, he went and got Herb Hand from Auburn, who was well-regarded. So, you know, is he the savior? Can he come in here and you have a really great offensive line like you've seen at Oklahoma and other places? Well, that's going to be where it starts for Texas. So that's what I'll have my eye on in August.
Well, who's going to be calling the plays? I mean, I know we've talked about it, and my gut, and it's sizable. My gut tells me that Tom Herman may be the play caller for the opener.
I don't think that'd surprise anybody. Did in the bowl game, admitted it, and whether they have 280 yards, they didn't set the world on fire, but neither did Tim Beck. And didn't you think it odd that he didn't mention Tim Beck by name in Frisco last week?
No.
He didn't? Why not?
He didn't mention P.J. Locke either. Those are guys that Tom's going in the summer going, you got to prove it to me, big boy.
But he mentioned his strength coach, Todd Orlando, the school president, Herb Hand.
Because he really believes those guys are the best at what they do. He doesn't believe that Tim Beck is the best.
It wasn't a show of faith, was it?
No, it wasn't. And the only time he mentioned that he talked about Tim Beck was when he was asked about him.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that he has a whole lot of confidence right now in his play caller. He's got an average quarterbacking, and he's got and the offense hasn't been anywhere near. Of course, you like to compare it to what happened before, but they had Deontay Foreman, so.
Yeah, that was different. He was a difference maker, one of those elite players, if you will. You and I both wrote about the play calling this situation this week, and you made the point about Charlie sticking with Sean Watson too long, and Charlie, I'm sure, would admit it today because he kept him after year one and then demoted him after week one, that abysmal loss at Notre Dame, and made the change one game into the next season. Where if you lost faith in somebody, trust your gut, trust your instincts, and make the move. Don't let them squirm, twist in the wind. If you don't believe in Tim Beck, either demote him or fire him and get somebody better, or you call the plays.
And it was Charlie's greatest failing besides losing at Kansas. I mean, inexcusable.
Yeah.
But he stuck with Sean Watson for too long, and then he turned around and stuck with Vance Bedford
for too long. Yeah.
Remember, he took the play calling from Vance Bedford,
right,
but his goose was cooked by then.
Oh, yeah.
There was no coming back.
Well, and then he had Wickline and Jay Norvell and finally Sterling Gilbert, but by then, like you said, it was too late. So if you had bad hires at offense and defensive coordinator, you're not going to last very long.
And, you know, and Todd Orlando is great at his job. I think they're going to be pretty good on defense. You're a little bit more excited about this.
I think they'll be real good on defense
than I am. I'm not as excited.
It's just like faith. I got faith in Todd Orlando, and I think the secondary is going to be terrific. They may have some rough patches, but these freshmen that are coming in here, Foster and Stearns and Cook, and the sky's the limit on what they can do.
But
so they're going to push people. Well,
but they're freshmen.
Well, we're still waiting on Brandon Jones to do something. I'm a big Chris Boyd fan. I think you know, he's got star quality in him. But that's
he's the only guy that I know that's going to bring it. I never know about freshmen. And Brandon Jones about to be a junior, so I don't know.
Oh, he is a junior, and Devontae Davis.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's had flashes, but it hadn't been consistent.
So. I don't know about the secondary. They have depth, but I don't know that there's greatness in the secondary. Chris Boyd's a really good player already.
Right.
He's been on the business end of some highlight reel catches because he's a gambler. And there's nothing wrong with that. And Tom kind of likes that riverboat type.
He likes it in his quarterback too much.
Oh, yeah.
And but, again, I regress the quarterback, and we're going to wait on that. So,
or are we going to wait?
We're going to wait.
Why are we waiting? They want to listen to those people out there. They want us to talk about quarterbacking so bad. But guess what? It's still July. We have
lots of time.
That will do it for episode 105 of On Second Thought. Got to thank Ben Ryder from Sports Illustrated for joining us. We are one step closer, 1 week closer to football season for the Duck. I'm Seth Golden. We'll see you later.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.